Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here. Rich Kimball, and up next on the program, the author of the book Making My Pitch. She made history, well, several times in the 1990s, pitching a college baseball for first Southern California College and then Whittier College, and then on to professional baseball, where she became the first woman to pitch in and then to win a minor league baseball game. We're joined by Isla Borders this afternoon. Isla, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Hi, Isla. This is Bruce. Yeah, I'm really excited, too, because I said to Rich, beyond all the wonderful things I want to talk to you about to do with your career, I have a granddaughter named Isla, and my older son is a firefighter paramedic. So I feel like we're on the same wavelength in some way.
Lots in common.
Yeah. Now, for those people who haven't read the book, I did talk about it. Rich and I just talked about the book a couple of weeks ago, and we both really, really love this book. If you could just give the listeners a little bit of your early background, especially your relationship with your dad growing up, which was tough at times, but certainly had an influence on your baseball career, and a little bit about what it was like growing up in Southern California in your house.
Yeah, the book is just rich with tons of information. That was the hard part, why it took so long to put it together, because it talks about my upbringing. You know, my dad was huge proponent for me to play baseball, very supportive, but he was also, you know, an alcoholic and very abusive. And so I finally opened up about my upbringing with my father. And it talks about the things that I had to go through and struggle through with Little League all the way to high school, to through college ball, professional baseball, kind of talks about pitching, what my mindset was when I was pitching in the Northern League, and that it also entails tragedy of losing a loved one and coming out of that and giving back. So there's a lot in there.
One of the things that I think is fascinating is that when you were playing high school baseball, I coached a high school football team that had two women on it. And I think they're the first two ever to get letters in Maine. There were always some tensions, but it seemed that you faced a different kind of tension because there was also some people who had a religious objection to you playing, not just girls shouldn't play on the boys' team. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, you know what? I have to tell you the truth. I went to Whittier Christian High School, and they are the ones that allowed me to play men's varsity baseball in high school. I played 4 years on the boys' varsity baseball, whereas the public school, La Mirada, where I'm from, the coach said you were not allowed to play here. So that's why I ended up there. But it, obviously, you know, growing up in a very strict Christian Baptist upbringing, it was extremely difficult. And it wasn't, you know, the great thing as far as being able to go out there and play baseball. But like I said, I have very supportive parents. I was very fortunate, and I had some supportive coaches. And it came down to there's always an obstacle, and people always put that in your way. But if you're good enough and if you can win for your team and you show that you can compete and go out there, you will find a spot.
I'm not sure that anybody sets out to be a groundbreaker. I don't know that that's anybody's goal. You play because you love the game. But at what point did you realize that this was perhaps about more than just you and your love of the game?
I'd say pro ball. In high school, even though I was going through some tough times, a lot of those guys already knew me. You know, I started playing when I was five, played Little League, played travel ball, and played other sports. So I was pretty well known. And then when I went into college, I had a lot of exposure. You know, I was on Jay Leno, Good Morning America, all these things. And I really learned a lot at that time. It grew. I was still, you know, getting out there to get an education. My main goal is to make the major leagues, professional baseball. And when I got into pro ball and I saw the pushback from women fans or women organizations saying, oh, my God, please don't do this, because if you go out there and fail, you're going to set all of us back. And at that point, I was like, ooh, this isn't just to go play baseball anymore or for my dream. If I mess up, I'm messing up for a lot of people.
One of the people that was instrumental in getting you into professional baseball was Mike Vec. I really liked the part of the book where you talked about how, yes, he's Bill Vec's son. Yes, Bill Vec was one of the great innovators, but he didn't do this as a stunt. He did this because he believed you could pitch. That had to be a very satisfying feeling to know that.
Yeah, even now, when people talk about Mike Zeck, which I'll get to in a second, I try to tell people I didn't go there with the contract. They didn't say, hey, come here, we want to sign you. They said, Mike's like, hey, I'm going to give you a shot. You have 2 weeks to make this team. You have, oh gosh, 20 pitchers that are showing up, and we're going to take 10. And you know what, by the way, we're not going to pay you. So come on out here. Here's your shot. You've got to make the team. And when I got there, he's like, Isla, we've sold out every game for the next 2 years. So he goes, coming out here, we're not going to sign you to sell any more tickets because it's sold out for 2 years. He goes, I am here to give you your opportunity and to do anything that you need to be successful. He goes, if you don't want to do interviews, you don't have to. But he goes, if you want to, then great. And that just set everything up for me. I'm like, okay, I've got the backing of the president of the team, the coaches, and they're just giving me an opportunity. And that's all that I wanted. And making the team that way by beating out other people, signing a contract then, and knowing that it wasn't to sell tickets makes me feel obviously very good about myself.
When you got Mike Zeck to write the foreword for the book, and in reading that, it sounds like the respect goes both ways.
Oh, my God. He's an amazing man. He's even taught me so much as an individual and how I go about my job and how I go about life. He's just a really good mentor to me in every way possible. And it started when I was, oh, my gosh, 21 years old.
One of the other things it seems he did was he knew when it was time to trade you.
Yes.
You know, he said you'll work a lot. You'll get more innings if you go to Duluth. And rarely is Duluth considered first prize, I think, in too many things. But it was where you got to win your first professional game, where you had a streak of 12 scoreless innings. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, if you could put a bunch of misfits together, that was the Duluth at that time. We had Dominicans. We had people from Mike Cuellar was my coach, Jackie Hernandez, George Minerwal. I was obviously the girl. We had African-American people. I mean, every different nationality you could think of, one Cuban. And we were kind of like all the people that, you know, we got released or we got traded. And we came together as a team. And we just had amazing team chemistry. And I'm so proud to have been a part of that team. And it kind of, once again, goes back to Mike Zeck, not just about his team, but he was really for me personally and said, hey, this is going to help you grow. And, it created so many more opportunities for me. I love Duluth.
Well, we're 40 years and then some since Title IX. And it certainly changed the landscape for women in this country, more opportunities than ever before. And yet there are still some old notions, some prejudices there, whether it's reading the comments of tennis players about what the Williams sisters could or couldn't do if they were playing against a man. How much have attitudes changed just since the time you played professionally?
Oh, my goodness. Well, when I first started out, there's stuff in the book that I write in college that I went through that was just nobody knew about. They try to harm you physically, emotionally, sexually. They try to do everything possible to get me to quit. And then when I got into pro ball, a lot of those guys kind of respected me. Now, the other team wasn't happy, but they're like, oh, my gosh, we know what you went through to get here. And then they just saw that I really love the game. I can win and compete. And it took about the first year to kind of show that. And then people's minds started to change, but it took a lot of time. I mean, even it goes to the umpires, you know, it goes to fans. It went to the media. The media was kind of a little tough. Whereas now I just went the other day to the Duluth Superior Dukes in St. Paul for the bobblehead night. And I just had so much love from the fans and from people, and was out there taking batting practice and throwing the ball. And the guys now that are playing are just, you know, responding so well. Like, hey, what pitch did you throw here? Can you show me this? Or, you know, I coach college baseball players, guys, and they are completely receptive. So it's been a huge change.
When you were in college, you had teammates who assaulted you, and we don't need to go anywhere you don't want to go with this. And you did one of the most courageous things I've ever heard about and or read about in the way you dealt with this. You said, they are not going to take anything from me. Do you see a connection between your attitude on the mound and your attitude in that moment in life, which I found courageous, uplifting? It made me cry. I was so emotionally involved in that. Do you make a connection there, or is that just something else that's inside Isle of Borders that goes well beyond baseball?
Yeah. I don't know how to explain that. I don't think I was born with that, but I think, you know, I started playing when I was 10 years old baseball, and going through the tribulations of up and down. And I kind of talk about some things that I went through in Little League and learning from a very, very young age that you had to be better. You had to work harder. You had to practice harder. You had to be mentally tough. And every little stage of life helped prepare me for the next one. And I just had a dream, and I wasn't going to let anybody stop me from getting there. As far as where that came from, I really don't know. It's just always kind of been in there.
Now, I'm assuming you have been to Cooperstown to see the baseball and the lineup card from your victory displayed somewhere there.
I have been to Cooperstown once. It was an absolute joy to be there. I got to meet one of my favorite players there of all time. Nolan Ryan was in at that time. And it's a long story, but my best friend married his daughter. So it was really fun for me to go over there and see Nolan Ryan and then have that experience.
Oh, the one thing I was going to ask you about, Mike Cuellar pitched on what is arguably the greatest pitching staff of all time, 420 game winners for the Orioles. What specifically did you learn most from him? Because he was one of the, I used to see him pitch when I was in college. He was one of the cagiest pitchers I ever saw.
Well, he was a little tough to understand.
Very heavy accent, yeah.
He had just, what I remember about him is his sense of humor and his love for the game. As far as teaching me certain pitches, he taught me a different side, and that was have fun out there. You just saw it in his face. He would go out there and throw batting practice with us. He would throw bullpens. He kind of helped me a little bit on the spin. With a ball, if he worked with me on stuff, it was mostly how to get better spin on the ball. My mechanics were pretty sound. And if I messed up, he would definitely go out there and yell at me. That's what I remembered the most. But I think the thing that I learned the most from him, though, was spin on the ball and just enjoying the game.
So, Isla, after your baseball career, what was it that led you to do what you've been doing, working as a firefighter as well as a paramedic? Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of separate. I lost my grandmother to a very tragic accident when I was younger. I was 5 years old. We were both swimming in the pool, and she drowned. And that just affected me greatly at that young age. I was always trying to almost put two lives into one because I felt like I owed something to her and to society. And when I got out of baseball, I wanted to give back. And then it just even expanded even more to become a paramedic after my partner died by a drunk driver. And I was, you know, just moved out to Arizona. I was by myself, no family, no friends, and was killed by a drunk driver coming back. And I had to start my new job in the fire academy, which is tough in itself, the day after the funeral. And it just prepared me to say, okay, my life is to serve people now. I want to be that person that is there for somebody's worst day because I've been there. And so that's why I work as a firefighter paramedic now.
Yeah, it's funny you said it's exactly the expression my son always uses. I want to be there on somebody's worst day because I may make the difference. And, you know, I think someone that's gone through what you've gone through and come out accomplishing all the things you've accomplished is going to be as good a firefighter paramedic as anyone. We are so pleased you were able to join us today, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you again down the line, because it sure is a great book, and I hope that everybody out there listening, Making My Pitch, is a really good book. Go out and get it and read it. It will lift your spirits.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Rich and Bruce. I appreciate your guys' support.
Treat to talk with. It's Isla Borders here on Downtown.